From Los Angeles, California, this is the Writer's Strike Chronicles, and I'm Tanya Barnes. Hello, everybody. Today is Thursday, January 17th, 2008, day 74 of the Writer's Strike. Last Monday, I went to the picket line at Warner Brothers Studios as a huge strike action was targeted against the studio in response to the layoff of about 1,000 workers who mainly do maintenance works. The Warner Brothers layoffs will join about 10,000 industry employees who have not worked since the strike began, and that has cost the local economy about $1.4 billion, according to Jack Kaiser, chief economist for the Los Angeles County Economic Development Corporation. In this episode, I meet up with Jennifer Glickman from The Big Bang Theory, Bennett Tramer from Saved by the Bell, and Maria Elena Rodriguez from Kingpin. These are all folks I've interviewed before on the show, and we'll begin with Jennifer Glickman.
We were here in support to say we think it is wrong that Warner Brothers laid you off, and it is part of their greedy corporate policy. We're here, standing here today to show you.
I haven't added up the final numbers, but we had over 450 in our 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. shift.
Oh my goodness.
Or maybe it was 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. shift. I did the numbers for 11 to 2. Between 11 and 2 alone, we had 430 people. And I haven't added up our numbers here for this last part of the day, but it looks like it's, you know, 1,000 people seems a reasonable addition of those numbers.
To show solidarity.
Yeah, to show, because, I mean, I think, unfortunately, one of the things that that people are trying to do is point a finger at the writers and the strike as the cause behind these layoffs and firings, when we really have to look at who makes those decisions. You know, we're not on strike because we want to be. We're on strike because they will not negotiate fairly with us, and those people are laid off because of the greed of the company, not because the writers are striking.
Did any of those people laid off come to the lines today?
I was not here this morning, but I heard that in the earlier part of the day, sometime between 8 and 11, when some people were leaving, that they did come out and they thanked us for being here. I don't know if people came and sort of marched on the lines, but people were definitely saying thank you. It meant a lot for them to see the writers out here, you know, showing that they are aware that the suffering is continuing for other people, too. It's not just below-the-line people on productions that are now affected. It's also going to be people working in corporate offices.
And if it's Warner Brothers, I used to work at Warner Brothers. The office employees are union, too.
I don't know, you know, about all the different levels of office employees. I know, for instance, the security guards are unions.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm sure there are unionized employees here. And that's why I think a lot of them can really understand what the situation is here. That's why we do have so much support from the people who work behind those walls.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are union members also know that their health and pension plans are, you know, just as much at risk. And obviously the people in the other entertainment unions, like, you know, the IATSE and Teamsters unions, you know, their pension and health is absolutely directly related to our cause and our issues, because, again, our internet residuals, you know, are tied to their internet residuals. If whatever we get on the internet is what they get to negotiate for their internet residuals that fund their health and pension plans to the tune of more than $350 million in 2007 alone. So I think the companies are blind to this fact that, though there may be some people upset that in the short run they're not making a paycheck this week, I think a lot of people are looking at the big picture and the long run. And that's what we're in this for.
What's your emotional pulse right now? Are you angry, fearful, happy, sad?
I'm certainly frustrated because I feel like we are asking for reasonable things. We're asking for fairness. I couldn't think of a more fair thing to say than, if you get nothing on the internet, we'll take a percentage of your nothing. And if you are getting great stuff from the internet, we'll take a percentage of that. I can't think of a more fair way to share in the revenue. So I'm frustrated that their actions are just, they're obviously designed to do something else. I believe that the end run that they're going for is busting all the unions, because it will ultimately make them the most money. every time they have to contribute to somebody's pension and health, every time they have to pay golden time and overtime and work within safety guidelines for the Teamsters, that costs them money. And even though it also makes sense, and even though it's fair to the workers, unfortunately, they're mostly just motivated by that greed. So I'm frustrated by that, but I'm also hopeful. Seeing all these people out here today made me feel really great about, you know, the writers, and that, you know, they're coming out, that they're feeling for these people. You know, we don't want other people to have to suffer. But ultimately, we all work for the same companies. We are all working for these same people, and they're doing it to all of us.
So is it fair to say your frustration has strengthened your resolve?
Yeah, because I still feel I'm right, you know? It doesn't make me feel less right than I felt the first day. And if anything, I've learned so much. I think the more information that's come out during this strike, I think that's also helped a lot of people understand. I spoke to members of IATSE, for example, who didn't realize that they got residuals.
Yeah, I didn't know.
And you know, that was eye-opening to them, and it certainly helped them see the importance of this fight. And I think for people to have more awareness of the salaries these CEOs make, the more information that gets out about the total amounts of money that they would have to pay to, like, to meet what the demands are of the Writers Guild, not even if they were negotiated down in any way, is minuscule compared to the money they're losing on this, you know, during this strike, compared to the money that they're paying these CEOs.
You know what amazed me is, because I don't know who the conglomerates are, I don't have a face to them yet. And so I was really surprised to find out that the head of Time Warner was a brother.
Well, there you go. I mean, it's nice to see somebody achieve tremendous success. It's horrible to see someone, making more than $22 million. I don't even remember he was making eight figures. I mean, he was making an astronomical salary. And to do it sort of on the backs of other people. I mean, to have other people go without so that you can have so much more than you could ever. I don't even know what people do with that much money. I mean, I'll be honest with you.
But the thing is, I didn't know what he looked like until I saw his face plastered on a picket sign. So
yeah.
That blew my mind.
I know, it's very wild. On the one hand, you go, well, it's nice to know that he can achieve such a position. On the other hand, that's horrible.
Yeah. So what do you say to I mean, I can't even access a faceless. I'm trying to get the other side. As a citizen journalist, I mean, my coverage is one-sided, but I don't even know what they look like.
I know, I think that's also another interesting thing. You know, we're out here. We're out here every day. We're out here early in the morning. And just like today, there's people, most people will honk in support, and then there's people who will hang their heads out the window and yell, you know, get back to work, don't be lazy. And I like yell back, I want to tell them to negotiate. You know, that's the other thing. We're at least out here.
Yeah.
We're out here. If people were angry that they were laid off, at least we're standing here and we can have a dialogue with them and say,
yeah,
let's tell you where we're coming from and why we're doing this. They're not even bothering to come out. It's not like the AMPTP is going to stand here and say, guys, I'm sorry you lost your job, but here's the really important reason why, you know, this motion had to be, you know, taken.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other thing. At least we've got the guts to come out here and meet people face to face and hear angry people if they're angry and hear the supportive people. I would love for them to come out and really have to account for what they're doing.
Right.
It's not going to
happen. Yeah, me too. Has the sentiment of get back to work, has that grown or about the same or diminished?
I seem to feel like it's the same. I mean, now we don't have the same numbers of people we used to have. I'm standing in front of the parking structure here where a lot of craft members, mm-hmm, you know, would park their cars and go in for their early morning calls. So I would be here at 5:30 in the morning to make sure that I would, you know, meet people face to face and let them know I'm not like,
put a face to it.
Yeah, and I'm not a person, you know, they perceive writers as people who, you know, turn up at 10 o'clock in the morning and whatever. You know, I'm sure they perceive us as being a certain way. So to me, it was really important to come early in the morning to be face-to-face and to be here to give them information, like that information about the pension and health plan. That was a great way to really get, you know, a feeling of how people were feeling. And we got a lot of people saying, you know, like, stay strong, and people who were also saying, like, I know that the leadership of IATSE is saying one thing, but I'm an IATSE member, and I and a lot of other people, you know, on my crew feel differently. So it's great to really get that feeling. Now that you know, there aren't, the shows are not in production, and people are not really walking in and out of this parking structure that much. This is a lot of what we get, is the honking, and occasionally, I'd say, you know, once or twice a day, you hear somebody yell, go back to work.
Okay.
But, you know, 1,000 times a day, 1,000 times an hour, it seems like, you hear people honking their support. And so, you know, there's going to be people who either don't like what they see, or they don't really understand it. And I even think there's a lot of people who would change their minds if they really had the information.
Yeah.
So, and that, and I would encourage people to go to WGA.org to get some of this information. It has information about how much money these CEOs make, how much money these corporations make, exactly what it is we're asking for. So you can also see for yourself what a small percentage it is of this massive amount of money that they make. We're asking to just be let in on it.
Jennifer, you work on The Big Bang Theory, is that right? Do you know I interviewed Bill Prady?
Oh, yes, we talked about that you were going to interview. He's doing a lot of the location picketing these days.
Do you consider yourself a geek girl, then?
Am I a geek girl? I would be honored to be considered as smart and geeky as Bill Prady, I have to tell you. He's Wiki Prady. He just knows everything.
Well, here's my question. What do you think is the more powerful invention, the printing press or the internet?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. You know, and this is just a factor of, you know, like when it happened. I mean, obviously the printing press made, you know, stuff available to a great number of people, like certainly greater than it was able to do before. But, you know, you can't argue with the internet now that we have 6+ billion people in the world, the amount of people who can be contacted. Unfortunately, sometimes maybe not with, you know, all the greatest stuff. Like, do we all really need to see Tub Girl? I don't think so. But, oops, yeah, don't go check that out. But as a writer, it's my job to know, like, what's going on in the world. But I think the internet has the greatest, because unfortunately what the printed word has done, in some cases it has also allowed people to be in control of the printed word. And the coolest thing about the internet, yeah, the internet is out of control, and that's the point. So it means even if, you know, the crazy person can go out there and put their crazy stuff on the internet, it also means that everybody can get stuff out there. And so I guess in that way it's more important, because I know not everybody in the world has a computer or has access to a computer, but it seems like it is mostly so pervasive that it really is keeping, it is getting rid of the gatekeepers, or at least the gatekeepers are also, you know, you and me.
But the internet will only be a great democracy if the digital divide no longer exists.
Well, that's kind of, the cool problem they're running up against, and that these conglomerates are fearful of, is how do they become gatekeepers there when it is something that is just so spread out and so diverse, and, you know, the best they can hope for is to put, you know, their brand on a website and hope people come there. They can't tell us, you know, your show can't be on our website, when we go, okay, I'm going to put it on my own website.
You're going to the control tower.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's not going to be the same amount of money that they have, but it is going to be, you know, the complete control of the makers of the content.
And hopefully together we'll figure it's a sustainable livelihood.
There's going to be some way. I mean, it can't just be, you know, people selling pornography.
Oh, no, actually, I just saw a study that because of user-generated content, income is down by 30% in the porn industry.
That's hysterical. I did see something about, I don't know if it was that documentary that talked about how, you know, when things went from film to VHS, how that totally screwed things. And this, obviously, how can the porn industry survive? But still, I mean, I don't know if this is still the case, but I know when the internet was more nascent, that the people who were just raking in the money were, you know, the, I guess, mostly women, so hooray sisters, but women standing in front of their webcams and taking
Jenny
off
Cam.
Their clothes. I mean, and they were making money, and I don't know if WallStreet.com makes a lot of money, WallStreetJournal.com makes money. I have no idea. But I know that, you know, people who sell their underpants on the internet make money.
Jenny Cam, I remember when eBay, this woman was auctioning off her used underwear on eBay. Did you remember that?
Angeline does that. That's a big part of Angeline's business. I don't know that she auctions it. I know. We all are wondering, like, what does Angeline do for a living? And Angeline drives around in her car.
Her pink Corvette.
Her pink car. She does her dry cleaning near me, so I've seen her do her dry cleaning sometimes. But, yeah, apparently, there was a documentary about Angeline, and apparently she will sell you, like, she, like, steps into it and steps out of it. Because she must have to sell hundreds of pairs of underpants to make a living. So she doesn't wear it for very long. But I guess she does actually wear each piece of underwear. So, you know, it's a weird thing. On the one hand, you're like, oh, what does that say about, like, our culture? But on the other hand, it's like, wow, that means everybody can sort of take it by the reins and do what they will with it. And I don't know, maybe in a weird way, it's not something that people are destined to make money at, like poetry. I don't know how many people get rich at poetry, but maybe it's sort of going to become one of those things that you do it because it is so important. I mean, and most people who blog, I don't think they're really making a lot of money at it, but it's important to them to say what they're going to say.
Yeah, yeah. Parting shots.
Oh, get down off your golden pillars. And be real human beings. I know somewhere in there someone's a real human being. Look at your wife. Look at your daughter. I know none of you have husbands because you're all men. And, you know, be a human being and deal with the other human beings. And be reasonable. Be fair.
Thank you.
That was Jennifer Glickman, strike captain at the Warner Brothers Studio Lot. Coming up is Bennett Tramer, who has written for Saved by the Bell and was working on Saved by the Bell, the musical, at the time the strike hit.
Hi, I'm Bennett Tramer, back again. Nice to be here again.
Good to see you.
And we're here at Warner Brothers, where I hear they're going to lay off 1,000 workers.
What do you think about that?
Well, it's incredibly sad. Unlike the executives, these are people that we deal with every day, and it's very sad. It's very sad, and I guess we want to be here to show support for them. We want to get back to negotiating and back to work. You know, we were, what was it, December 5th, I think, or December 7th, the AMPTP
stepped away from
negotiations. So there's not a great deal we can do if there's no one there to talk. We're willing to do it any time.
Where's your resolve been since I last saw you?
The cause is still just. That doesn't change, you know. And it's kind of interesting that you sort of meet new people, different groups, different age groups, different kind of writing than you do. Uh-huh. And so it's kind of sort of, I'm not sure they'll be home working, but at the same time, it's kind of interesting dealing with other writers. We're often very solitary, sitting at home writing or just working with a few people we work with on a television show. So it's interesting meeting everybody, getting to know them.
So how has the picket line enriched your creative experience?
That's a great question. I wish I had more than a mediocre answer. I always think meeting new people kind of helps. I'm encouraged that so many younger people like what I write. It makes me feel there's an audience out there for what I write, so it's nice. But the length of the strike, it really is a matter of resolve. And I suppose some people who haven't been through these before are starting to think maybe we should settle, and it really is a time, and they need writers. They may not need them right this minute, although they're probably being hurt with advertising revenue, but eventually the conglomerates that run show business are going to need writers. So if we stay out long enough, they're going to have to come and make an offer. It may not be the best possible offer for us. It'll certainly be much better than what they've offered before. And I know I'm not the first person to say this, but the only reason that we have residuals at all is because people were willing to take a long strike in 1960. The only reason we have health care, pension, people before us were willing to strike and stay out. And it's short-term pain over long-term gain. But I know people are probably losing their houses and their shows may be canceled. It's difficult. It's very hard. Oops.
That's all right. But I think the conglomerates are also looking at it as short-term financial hit for long-term financial hit.
That's possible. That's possible. I don't know how they think. I'd be a very bad billionaire corporate. I'd take the money, but I'd be a very bad executive, you know. I always had trouble firing one person. Having that kind of control over people would be very difficult for me personally.
Yeah, yeah.
And also the sort of heartlessness of it, that it doesn't really matter how good or bad something is. Do you think it's going to make money or not? That's, I always tried to stick up for something that was good and hope that would become commercial.
Are you watching the stories about some writers and producers who are, like, taking on the internet and creating content for the internet?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and if I were smarter than I am, I would follow their example. It's a great idea.
But an old dog can learn new tricks.
Yes, it can. A middle-aged dog can...
Okay, a middle-aged
dog. Middle-aged dog can learn new tricks, yeah, yeah. Well, maybe my son will help me. He's more internet savvy than I am, or my daughter when she's home for the summer. But I think it's a great idea that distribution and the cost of production is much cheaper now than it ever was. And often greed is counterproductive, you know, and in refusing to give us what we deserve on the media that they now control, we may go out and create our own media and not need them. So their short-sightedness and greed may eventually cost the conglomerates much more money than giving us 2.5% of all the profits from the internet.
Well, I think you'll have a different kind of struggle in trying to find your audience and hold on to your audience.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's a new media. We'll have to learn how to go, yeah. And what works on it. I imagine attention spans, which have gotten shorter since I was a kid, are even shorter on the internet. So you better have a different kind of writing that grabs people right away. I don't think reflective stuff is going to work terribly well. My dinner with Ann Draper, I don't know, maybe not. I was thinking if my dinner with Ann Draper premiered on the internet, I don't know how it would have done, but maybe people would be interested to sit there and watch
for
people converse
yeah,
for 2 hours about life and politics and art. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. What do you think is the more powerful invention, the internet or the printing press?
You're asking really good questions. When I say you're asking good questions today, that seems simply like last time you didn't ask good questions. Those were good questions, too. The internet or the printing press?
Well, I was just getting to know you then.
Yeah, yeah. I guess nothing quite equaled the printing press because it brought sort of literacy to the masses. And even though it's visual literacy, it's the notion that not just the elite can be enlightened and, you know, express ideas. So I suppose the printing press is a single, the idea of mass producing information and knowledge and education, nothing can quite equal the printing press. There's a Gutenberg Bible, you know, in Pasadena, at the Huntington Library in Pasadena.
Oh, I did not know that. Now you're teaching me something.
Yeah, original Gutenberg Bibles, yeah.
Oh. Cool. I have to go check that out.
Yeah.
Parting shots?
I just am very impressed with the people I'm meeting, you know, with the writers, how dedicated they are and how hardworking they are and how honorable they are and how creative. I mean, walking with them, you're going to walk with extremely talented people. They're very funny, very intelligent. So.
Does it make you proud of yourself?
I'm proud of the group I'm in anyway. Yeah. Proud of my colleagues, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's good to see you again.
It's good to see you again, and you're a good interviewer.
Thank you.
You get me thinking.
That was Bennett Tramer from Saved by the Bell. Coming up is Maria Elena Rodriguez from Kingpin.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just walking the picket line with my friend Maria Elena Rodriguez. How's it going today?
Well, it's, you know, it's still useful to walk. It's still important to walk. And every day you ask yourself, is this making a difference?
What do you think?
Whether or not it makes the kind of difference we hope it does, it's still important to do it because
Why?
It is a presence. It is a presence that we are basically saying by being here, we're not going away. You know, we are not going away. It is not resolved. You know, we still want to deal. We still want to negotiate.
Why are we picketing specifically today? Why is this studio being targeted today?
Because Warner Brothers has pink slipped 10,000 of their...
10,000?
Isn't it 10,000?
All right.
Yeah, there's 10,000. The line... Well, they've put 10,000 of their employees on notice that their jobs may be up in a month or two.
You know, let me tell you a story. In 88, I worked in that building over here, yep. Right here across the way, the glass building at Warner Home Video.
Yeah.
And there were picketers out the gate when I worked here. Uh-huh. But since I worked in home video, I never got a slip.
Well, it was a burgeoning market.
Yes.
Yes, and
then
that tell you that they were saying, oh, it's too new. You know, we don't know if it's going to make any money. We'll get back to you. Well, and of course, what's a division that's not being pink slip? So the version of that today would be the internet. That's the new DVD. I mean, who's talking about VHSs these days? We're not talking video anymore. So, you know, guess what? Why are we fighting so hard? Why are they fighting so hard?
Why are they digging their heels? Why do you think?
Because there's money in them thar heels.
So you think they're willing to take a short-term hit in the billions of dollars right now to take a long-term gain in trillions of dollars on the internet?
It could be. I mean, you know, the finance world, yes, you suffer a certain amount of debt to make a certain amount of profit. And I don't know if this is making enough debt, but, you know, this is business as usual. This is nothing, you know, when the dust settles, the only thing that's going to show on the balance sheets is, well, this quarter down, that quarter down, and then this quarter, ooh, wing it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I know from the time I spent as a line producer and production manager, you want to save money, you want to show a good quarter, want to get a good bottom line, you get rid of the employees. You get rid of the salaries and the, you know, so even though that hurts your product at that moment, for that quarter, it looks like you made money. Why? Because you spent less. You spent less on people.
How did you feel when you had to let people go?
Awful.
How did you do it?
It was part of my job. They are doing what they believe is their job. And in our case, you know, the money actually was running out in our budget at that time. I had no choice. But it always fell like between Thanksgiving and Christmas, which was like really heartbreaking. But that's the end of the fourth quarter. I got it. I got the math.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and this is just a piece of math.
Yeah.
This is, you know, it's like, I'm sure when it's all done and said, it's going to be, okay, guys, it was nothing personal. It was just business. It was nothing personal. And on a balance sheet, yeah, on Wall Street, this is nothing personal.
Can I ask you your opinion on somebody? I was walking the line today, and I went up to a writer, and I asked him if I could interview him. And he said, no, he already talked to ABC. He was all talked out. Can you comment on that? Because you know what? I got insulted at first.
No, I can understand that, because some writers, and I don't know who this is, and you don't have to tell me, really have been used for quotes more than others, and they are tired. They are tired. And also, there are certain parameters of what this guy could probably say and couldn't say. And so he probably felt like a broken record.
Okay, I feel that. I understand that.
I think, you know, don't take it too personally. And yes, you do wonder if you were another ABC affiliate, if he would have treated you any differently. Maybe not. But I honestly think some folks just don't want to talk anymore.
All right. Well, see, that's where I got insulted. I was like, well, since I don't have a badge, since I don't have an organization behind me, hello, he just talked to Disney for what? Sound bites. Come on.
Well, and for him, he thought maybe, you know, that would get a bigger placement. And what he had to say, he thought might be, you know, might cause a little bit more dust. So, I know from having been a working journalist, there are just sometimes when people don't want to talk anymore, especially if they've done, like, you know, in press junkets. They've done 5 hours of press junkets. The last thing they want to talk about is their movie again.
Okay, so...
And with the script, if this guy has been, and you don't have to tell me who he was, if he's been used for PR so many times, he probably feels talked out, and had you gotten him earlier in the day, or you got him tomorrow, he might be, you know, willing to deal.
All right, so...
I know, it's hard to say don't take it personally, but of course you feel like you have to take it personally.
Anyway, do you have any parting shots, anything you say as we go into, what day is this, the 60-plus day of the strike?
I forget which day. I don't know. Are we counting weekends?
No, I don't. Well, you know what? I do. Yeah, I do. I'm using some calculator on the internet.
I don't know. No, this is a test of commitment here. It's like, you know, we could say, this is going on too long, but that's not why you quit a strike. You quit a strike because you reach a resolution of some sort. It may not be exactly what you want, but you don't just do it because you're tired and because everybody doesn't like you anymore, or, you know. So that's it. This is absolutely deliberate. You know, the other sides are just... The sides try to wear each other down. So this is normal. This is business. So, I don't know. That's not a very ringy end sentence, but, you know, in the language of Wall Street, nothing personal, you know. Well, we're going to kill you because you would like to kill us. So, you know. And, you know, I had an old mentor who used the analogy that it was a jungle out there, and it was like, either you eat or you get eaten. And she would come home on a bad day and say to her husband, today I ate. Or she'd come home and say, today I got eaten. And with animals, it's nothing personal. They're hungry.
It's kind of like World of Warcraft.
Yeah. They're just going to eat, because if they don't, you're going to eat them.
All right, so. Thank you very much.
So having eaten, or
having had lunch,
right. Go get ice cream.
You have been listening to the Rider Strike Chronicle podcast, available for free through iTunes. For more information, visit us at www.strikechronicles.com. To contact us, please call 310-439-8754 or send us an email at info@strikechronicles.com.